Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur with your host, Steve Kidd, third-generation minister and 30-year business coach. Listen in as amazing, world-changing authors, speakers, and coaches share their struggles and victories, and hear from best-selling authors' insight into how you, too, can live your life as a thriving entrepreneur.
This is Steve. Welcome to Thriving Entrepreneur. Thanks for being with me here today as we talk about money and selling and other dirty words like that. I know that's kind of funny, but that is totally the way those two words often think and feel in the business community, even when people are talking about them. So we want to talk about sales. We want to talk about money today here on Thriving Entrepreneur. My name is Steve. I am a third generation minister and international best-selling author of 22 books and counting. And I love to help people discover their voice, their message, put their words down on paper, and even more than that, make it a bestseller and all of the things that go beyond that. I love that so much. And I would love to hear you really see and feel and know your voice and that stuff that makes you so super cool. I love sharing that with people and seeing the lights in their eyes when that comes out. Again, today we're talking about sales and we're talking about money. All too often, even people who are sales trainers kind of tiptoe around the word selling and sales. I've heard people who are like, sales isn't a dirty word, you have to think about it as, and that's where their talk starts. For me personally, for those of you that know my backstory, I started selling when I was 5 and have pretty well been in the sales industry, sales and marketing for basically the rest of my life. And I love the concept of selling. Now, I know people that will then turn around and they will frame it as, well, it's not really actually selling, it's sharing. And there is some truth to that, because selling really is about giving a person an opportunity to meet a need that they have. But the truth of the matter is sales, more than anything else, is about listening. It's about hearing what a person needs and then meeting their needs and doing it in such a way with a skill that allows you to be able to empower them. A good salesperson is not somebody that's out there tricking you, not somebody that's like, if you ever saw the movie, it was a lot of years ago now, called 10 Men. It was talking about the original people that were selling aluminum siding. It isn't really about that. It isn't even always, or usually, I should say, like when the guys from Kirby and the people with washing machines and stuff like that were selling these new appliances into the houses that were expecting electricity. Before they ever had the electricity, before they could ever demonstrate it to them, it was just something that electricity was going to allow them in their life. But again, it wasn't an awful thing. I've met some of the guys that were in some of those earlier days. I mean, they were very old men when I met them when I was very, very young. And the thing about it is they were offering conveniences to people's lives. They were offering opportunities for them. And so therefore, in the selling, they were just simply listening to the needs of others and then helping meet those needs. You see, when we talk about selling, we're not necessarily talking about a dirty word. And ultimately, yes, as salespeople, we make money. And money can be a very good thing. It's been said that money makes you more of who you are. I'm not sure that that's always true. I think money gives you the opportunity to be who you can be if you choose to. Anything can be used for bad, but when given the opportunity, there are some opportunities to really enhance others' lives and our own lives too. And that's, of course, a great way to be a thriving entrepreneur. It's a great way to thrive in your life and allow others that come into your life to thrive as well. So we've got a couple of really great guests here to share with you today, and I'm really looking forward to talking to you on sales and money Let's go into our first guest.
Join me in welcoming Thomas Ryan. Hey, Thomas, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing really good. Thank you. So first off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
How I show up in the world? That's an interesting question. So my background, I'm CEO and founder of Bigly Sales. Bigly, we are doing data generation and AI for businesses around the country, typically businesses 5 million up in revenues. And, you know, that's what I love doing.
What kind of AI elements are you creating for businesses these days?
So we're doing AI for sales. So there's a couple of different areas that we're dealing with. Number one, we're setting up autoresponders. So we already have autoresponders set up for email and for text. So, you know, when you're at an office, you can set up that autoresponder and you can have it reply, hey, I'm out of the office. So if someone messages you, they know you're not around. Well, with this, we can set it up in a very similar way, except we can feed all your company data. Right. Any marketing material you might have, anything from your website, and really pretty much anything into the AI. So on the back end, we're using Claude and ChatGPT, and we'll feed all your company information into that. And then we'll give it a goal. The goal could be to have give you a call or to book an appointment via a Calendly type system or, you know, whatever we want that goal to be. And then the AI will respond to any sort of messages, answer any questions, and then try to push people into that conversion event that someone's looking for. So that's set up. That's live for text. That's live for email. We're connecting that to all the major social medias as well. And, you know, that's the first thing. We also have it where if you want to email folks, you can actually write a custom email to everyone in your database. So if you have 50,000 people in your database, it's not really feasible for you to go and write a personalized message to everyone. The AI will go, it will grab all of their information and all the information on their company. It'll actually write a personalized message to them. And again, then we can have the autoresponders on the back end. So to automate a lot of the messaging just in a much more personalized way for folks.
I love that a lot. So, and I was kind of hoping you were like, yeah, and we've come up with a way so that the auto dialers of the past we now can do, and it sounds just like real live salespeople, but maybe we're not quite there yet.
We're real close. So we're working on that. We just have some latency issues right now, where if we can get the lag on this down to under a second, we'll push that live. So we're probably looking January or February to have that. And again, have sequences where we'll be able to have someone come to a landing page, to a form fill. And then if they don't call immediately, we can actually have the AI reach out, give them a call, have them answer four or five questions and do a live transfer to a sales agent. So this is really kind of an intermediate step here to handling all that front end and then giving highly qualified leads to your closers.
I love that a whole lot. So, you know, there's kind of two groups. I mean, there might be a third that I don't know about, but there's the people who are just jumping on the bandwagon and they absolutely love AI. And then there are the folks that are absolutely convinced that AI is the rise of the machines and that Terminator will happen next week. Can you talk a little bit? I mean, I know you're right in the trenches with it, but so can you explain for folks that are a little scared of AI, you know, what it really is, what it can do for them, and what it could mean for them?
Yeah. So let's put this to rest right now. AI is not taking over anytime soon in a Terminator type fashion. It, for lack of a better word, is really advanced autocomplete. So what they did at ChatGPT is they went and they basically fed the entire internet into it. And the reason that AI is happening now and not 10 years from now or 10 years ago is we finally have the processing power to be able to do this. That processing power didn't exist to be able to go and turn around and give an answer that made sense 5 years ago. Now it does. So that's why it's happening today. But it's still autocomplete. It will take something that you ask it, and it will find other things that were written on the internet that are similar, and it will try to put those things together in a format like it has seen before that makes sense. The way that they do it is each word is a character, and they'll put in however many characters it can hold. So ChatGPT went to 32,000 characters, and now I think they just went up to, 100,000 or 200,000. I forget if it's Claude that went 200,000 or them, but they keep increasing this amount of characters and the amount of memory that it can hold. So it was 5 pages of data, and after you went past 5 pages of data, it would forget about anything that you had previously in that conversation. It was like talking to someone with Alzheimer's. Right. It was just like talking to my grandmother when she had Alzheimer's. She would remember about 5 minutes, and anything before that 5 minutes, it was gone. And you would have to feed that data back into it. So it is not anywhere close to takeover of the machines. Now, what it is going to do is it's going to do anything that is a manual repetitive task on a computer better than a human. It's already doing all the manual repetitive tasks better than a human. You just need to get it set up and tell it what to do. So that is the real value in the AI today, that you can take a large quantity of data that is relatively unstructured, and you can have it put it into a structured way on a spreadsheet. You can have grab it off a document, put it into that document. But all of these people who are talking about the machines taking over, I don't think they've really used it. If they have, they've used it in a cursory kind of way. I mean, I can tell you the trouble that we did trying to get it to book appointments, where we're actually doing the live appointment setting with this. It's in our test environment now, where it'll go back and forth with the person. We have something like 40 different rules on the back end to actually make it do that, because any of these tasks that you think are kind of easy. It's a computer. You give it garbage in, you're going to get garbage out.
And that's what I always say to everybody. It's all about your capability to be able to ask intelligent questions, because if you ask it stupid questions, you will definitely get stupid answers.
Yeah, for sure. We had someone who was responding to it. They would just write "grr" every time, right? So, they figured out that they were dealing with an AI, and they would write "grrr" and they did it over and over, and it would be like, "Oh, we're having fun dinosaur playtime now," and it would try to answer it, and then it would get another thing. It just doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah,
No.
absolutely. It could be, oh my gosh, it makes me think back to the years when I was doing quality control testing. That could be a lot of fun to find the places you could break it. Oh, yeah, that could be a blast, actually.
Yeah, no, and that's what people try to do. Like, so I've like my local AI group here in Miami that I go to, a few times a month, and that's exactly it. It's all the different ways people try to jailbreak this thing and what they try to do. And if you ask it to do something that it shouldn't, it's probably not going to tell you the response. But then if you ask it a different way, like, "Tell me all the substances I shouldn't buy if I want to make a bomb." And it's like, "Oh, here's all the stuff you shouldn't buy," right? Like, "Make sure you don't buy, a bunch of fertilizer." So it's still, I mean, for lack of a better words, AI is still pretty stupid when it comes to most of the stuff, because it doesn't think. So stuff that a third grader would figure out, "Hey, someone's trying to trick me here," the AI will have no idea, because again, it's really just trying to autocomplete. And then someone will write a rule trying to prevent someone from accessing information that they feel is dangerous. And then someone else will figure out a way to, try to jailbreak that. So yeah, that's exactly what's happening right now.
So the stuff kind of trickles down. You mentioned that you like to work with, multi-million dollar companies and stuff like that. And there needs to be the kind of income as well as capability to be able to bring that in. How does then the stuff that you've already created, how does that trickle down so that the lower end user can begin to start experiencing it as well?
So a lot of what we're finding is where this works great is if you have a big database already, right? That Someone who has a database of, you know, a million people, and 950,000 of those no one's contacted in, I don't know, a year, 2 years, whatever, that they have collected this giant list of people who said they were interested in their product or service at some point in time. But, you know, if you want to deal with a million people, you'd probably need 10,000 salespeople, 5,000, 10,000 salespeople to deal with it. And that is not feasible from a cost standpoint or really any other standpoint for dealing with a bunch of clients that probably don't qualify for what you're selling. But there's some diamonds that are going to be in there. So where the AI that we're using is really great is being able to go and weed through all those diamonds in a way that you would never be able to do without having 5,000 salespeople. So the AI can start reaching out, it can automate messages, it can write customized messages to them, it can send them texts, et cetera. Hey, we're following up, you signed up a while back. Just wanted to, you know, see if you'd be interested in rescheduling. And then if they say, well, tell me some more about what you're doing or what's changed or whatever, well, then the AI can answer all those questions because it has that training document and it uses that as the source of truth. For a lot of the smaller companies that are out there, what we've found that they really need is the data. So we'll come up with a custom audience. We have 6 billion devices connected, 200 million hashed emails. We can come up with a customized audience really against any metric that you can think of. Privacy is dead, buried. You know, they had the funeral already. The parade's over. Like, it's done. We can come up with pretty much any custom audience you can think of by any metric. You know, I want women over 65 in the state of Nebraska who own a house that's over $500,000 and has a pool, you know, and 3 grandkids. You can come up with that audience. And what we're doing is then marketing to that audience using a mix of paid ads to the specific audience, email campaigns, et cetera, you know, everything that we can within the confines of TCPA and CAN spam.
Love it so much. So for the people that are in that level with their company that they could use your services, how would a person work with you?
So, you know, what we're finding is a lot of those folks don't have the money to come out and do a customized solution. We are putting out pay-per-call solutions for a lot of these different verticals. So for example, we're doing a lot of stuff with home services. You know, anything that's high ticket like that and verticals that we deal with, we'll have it where they can jump into a network with us and we'll be able to feed them calls during business hours. So that is probably the best way today, that a lot of the folks that are signing up for us will be like, hey, we'll do this at $200 a lead or $300 a lead or $150 a lead or whatever the number might be. And we will provide them those warm leads from the, you know, thousands of different landing pages that we've set up and the paid ads and all the other stuff that we're doing to drive in that traffic.
I love that. And where would they go to connect with you?
Just to biglysales.com. And there they can talk to a live sales rep or, you know, fill out a form or, you know, whatever they'd like.
And that's BIGLEY sales.com.
Close. It's BIGLY. BigleySales, SALES.com. Not BigleySale.com. Someone put up a page copying us, trying to steal our traffic, which we're talking to Google, trying to get taken down right now.
I love it. Well, Thomas, I really appreciate all you're doing in AI. Keep at it. And thanks so much for being here as a guest on the show today.
Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate it. And any other questions, anything else, I'd love to come back.
Absolutely. We're glad we had you here.
All right, thank you so much.
I love AI, and there are so many cool things that can be done with it. Things that can really serve the people that come into your life, your clients, your friends, your family. Things that can really make life easier and better for you. And then ultimately, in the sales process, can make it so that it's a better experience for the people that we're meant to serve. And ultimately, that is a very, very good thing. I think often we think about the downside to it, But I encourage you today, even as we go into this first commercial break, to think about all the cool things that AI is bringing to the table. Think about the aspect that it can bring to your sales, and then think about how that could help you live as a thriving entrepreneur. We'll be right back. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we're talking on selling and money, those two evil words that are so important and yet so often disparaged for the things that they never actually did. Other people's bad use of a thing doesn't make it a bad thing. And I really encourage you today to be able to take the chance to look at the way you're selling in the world, to work at the way that money is impacting your life, and then really learn how to be able to have a good relationship with money, to use it as the tool in the way that it is. You know, I mean, if you used a hammer to bang yourself up alongside the head, that wouldn't be a very good thing, would it? The same thing's really true with money. But don't take my word for it. Let's listen to an expert whose expertise is helping people really have a good relationship with money. Let's jump right in. Join me in welcoming Nolan Bradbury. Hey, Nolan, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I am doing really well. So to begin us off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, great question. So by trade, I'm an accountant, CPA technically, but I would say accounting is not necessarily the passion or the it in my life. I would say helping business owners, particularly small business owners, reach their sort of full potential as a business owner, but also in their personal life by way of accounting is really sort of my calling or what I try to focus on.
So tell us a little bit more about that. How do you help people reach their full potential through accounting?
Yeah, so a couple ways primarily. So I think first off, oftentimes business owners, you know, they tend to get in this space of not having necessarily the resources or the right resources to help them move past whatever current place they're in. Oftentimes, from at least an accounting perspective, that's a driving force the driving force for that rather is that they don't necessarily have a great relationship with accounting. There's a lot of surveys and studies out there that show for business owners, accounting is the least enjoyable part of running a business, which I can appreciate and understand. And so what I do with them is help them understand sort of why they feel that way towards accounting, like what it is that's sort of causing that friction for them. And then help them sort of remedy that, you know, depending upon what it is that's sort of driving that. Because ultimately, whether we like accounting or not, it is a crucial part in a business's success, but also our personal success as well, in terms of understanding our finances and that.
I love that. It's always fun for me when I get accountants and others, you know, jobs like that, that a lot of people shy away from, don't like, whatever kind of words you want to use, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Because I love hearing about how interesting and appealing and exciting it is for you. So what got you into accounting?
Yeah, kind of a funny story. I didn't necessarily set out to be an accountant. What I would say is I actually took a class in high school and discovered I was actually pretty good at it. And then when I got to college, I found myself going down the path because I enjoyed that there is both a black and white aspect to accounting, but also a lot of gray. And in that gray, there was a lot of problem solving that could be done. And I really enjoy sort of logicking my way through problem solving and then ultimately helping people do the same thing. So while I am an accounting major, my quote unquote sort of minor in college was in psychology. And so I'm always very fascinated by the way we make decisions and what motivates us or not motivates us. And I use that sort of aspect of my background to also guide from an accounting perspective. And so while those are two sort of seemingly not large overlaps on a Venn diagram in terms of sort of areas of the world, I have found that having both of those perspectives really sort of helps clients bridge the gap in terms of the things that sometimes are holding them back.
That's awesome. So, I mean, there's a certain element of things you need to know in accounting and certain parts of it that you really should just find somebody that really loves it like you to have do it.
Yeah.
How does a person know where to draw that line?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple ways you can approach that. Sometimes it's both. I would say, first off, I think it's really important to understand that time is like the one asset that you can never get more, which means that you really need to make sure you use the time you have for the sort of highest and greatest use. So unless you're really good at accounting or you have so much free time that it's like the thing that you do sort of to fill the time. It's something that can be very easily outsourced to a professional. Oftentimes what you'll be paying them far out is far less than what you would be sort of giving up from using that time for that. So kind of the first question is, what could you be doing with that time if you weren't spending it sort of on accounting? The second thing too is understanding, and this kind of goes back to what I said earlier, is if you don't like something, you're going to avoid it, which typically means you're going to neglect it. And so if you're in that place and it's not a passion for you, which again, I totally can understand, it's probably something that's not getting the attention it deserves and needs, in which case you're better off giving it to someone who doesn't have an aversion to it potentially, and can help sort of manage that in a more meaningful way, and not sort of like have it be something that could, be holding you back.
Love that so much. What are the kind of things that people think they know about accounting that they almost always get wrong?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's oftentimes it comes down to understanding sort of what the financials are really telling them and how to interpret them. A scenario I often come across with clients is they will sort of ask for the P&L. And I get that. It shows your revenue, it shows your profit. But fundamentally, the most important financial statement for most people is usually their balance sheet because it tells you everything. It tells you what your holdings are. It tells you what your cash positions are. It tells you what your liabilities are. But it also shows you how much you're making. The P&L is oftentimes geography. It sort of tells us where things are and what they represent, but it isn't always the best representation of like what our current status is. And so it isn't that it's wrong that they get wrong to sort of look at the P&L. I think it gets a prominence that is maybe a little bit misplaced in that. Other pieces of information are probably more meaningful than just the P&L on its own.
Perhaps you're familiar with the book Profit First.
I am.
And I both loved as well as was a little confused about his premise of accountants showing that you have a profit when you really don't. And I was wondering if you could maybe explain that to us a little bit. How can we have a profit and then not have that money just sitting there?
Yeah, so this is actually a great point and kind of feeds back into why I think the balance sheet is sometimes more meaningful. So, what's important to understand is what you see at the bottom of your P&L, your profit, in other words, is what now is sort of like the taxable number, or if you will, what you've spent or what you've earned minus what you've spent. But there are other places that money can come into or leave the business, which are not reflected on the P&L. So maybe a good example of this is say you have a line of credit or some debt that you have, and say your monthly payment is, I don't know, say $2,000. Well, a portion of that payment is going to be the principal, and a portion of that is going to be interest. If you solely looked at the income statement, you would just see the interest portion, which, just for the purpose of this, say it's $250 of the $2,000. Well, what that profit is telling us, or what the P&L is telling us, is it's kind of neglecting that other $1,750. And so when you think about sort of what your cash has, what your cash position is, which is kind of what owners often think about when they think of profit, it's like, what do I have to spend? There's this delta that exists between what the P&L tells you versus what you really have. And so a common sort of place that people tend to get themselves in trouble is they are P&L rich or profit rich, but cash poor, meaning it's the disconnect between sort of what the P&L is showing us versus what we actually have in our bank account, or what we have available to spend on other things, or maybe in other cases, what we've already spent on other things. And it's that usually it's related to items that are sort of outside the P&L and are flowing through the balance sheet.
So we take a look at those, and we haven't to this point really learned how to understand the documents that we as owners should understand. What is the best way to learn that? You know, because unfortunately, and no offense to you, you know, but a lot of accountants are so good at what they do that they're not real great at explaining the hows and the whys of it. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah, 100%. Accountants are very detail oriented in that sense. Yeah. And so they don't often, and I'll say we don't always have the wherewithal to sort of pull ourselves out of the detail and kind of explain a jargon to other people.
So what's the best way to go and learn those kind of things so that we don't just get handed the piece of paper and it says, you know, you made XYZ for profit and you go, yay. And then, you know, you pretty well don't really know what to do with it.
100%. So the honest answer is, at least in my opinion, and so I think I said up front, there's reasons why people oftentimes they have an aversion to accounting. And what you just described is one of the five reasons I sort of call out. And that's that the data that you're being given as a business owner isn't being explained, and or it's not being tailored to you. And so what I mean by that is, basically what you're being given is a piece of paper and you're kind of expected to be an expert on it. The real only way to work through that, unfortunately, is to work with someone who can help translate that information to you. What I often tell my clients and what I work with them on is, I am more of a translator than anything else. One of the main roles of my job is to help you decipher and understand what the data is and what it's actually telling you, so that you have the right information to make the best decisions you can. So it's not necessarily, I'll say profound, but I would say if that's the place you find yourself in, it is really critical that you find a partner who can help sit down and explain that information to you in a way that makes sense to you. There are lots of ways to explain it, but it really does need to be something that is meaningful to you. And oftentimes, sometimes that's not necessarily looking at the P&L or the balance sheet. It's looking at KPIs or key performance indicators that are indicative of sort of the performance of the business, or graphs or charts if you're a more visual person. It's really important to find the thing that is going to be the least of a barrier for you to sort of interpret this data and work with someone who can help make it meaningful and understandable for you and your way of learning.
I love that very much. So when is the time? I mean, you know, a person starts out there, and I know we all jump to an accountant way too late. When really should we bring in an accountant? I mean, and maybe the question I'm really asking is do we start off with somebody that's just, you know, a bookkeeper that's doing things in an Excel spreadsheet or really basic things, and then move up to an accountant? Or should we really just right out of the gate have a really solid accountant working with or for us?
It's a great question. The unfortunate thing is, I think the answer is kind of, it depends, but I'll try to give a more general answer that maybe will be meaningful for people. So I think when you first start out, so if it's day zero of owning a business, I would strongly recommend that you work with an accountant to, one, help you understand your business from an accounting perspective, what your requirements are, what your compliance needs are from like a tax as well as an accounting perspective, and then help you really design a system, processes, if you will, from an accounting perspective, but both some operational pieces as well that will help make sure that those things are achieved and reached. So I think day zero, day one, that's a really important part of it. I think the reality is if you're going to have better success if you think of accounting as not something that you set and forget, but rather something that you is similar to the rest of your business, that you're sort of continuously analyzing and revisiting. Again, I know that that's probably not what we want to hear or the area maybe we want to spend the time on in our business. But if you have a partner in that, one that's trustworthy and dependable and can help translate that information, then regular sort of revisiting of that is going to be really helpful. And so getting in early, making sure things are set up right from the beginning, very critical to the process. I think as you go on, as there's growth moments in the business, and as the sort of life events of a business occur, maybe you add another product, maybe you change the way you're selling, that you use those as opportunities to revisit the way things are being done on the back end, and that would include accounting. You're going to be more successful, and you're going to have less likelihood that you're going to run into accounting issues or tax issues as a result of that.
So there are a lot of us that need your help. How
Yep.
would we work with you?
Yeah, so probably the easiest way for people to connect with me is you can find me on LinkedIn. And you can just make a connection and you know say you heard me talking with Steve today, and then I can reach back out and we can find a good way to connect. If you'd like, you can go to our website, bradfieldco.com, and there's an opportunity there to submit a form and we can connect and get something scheduled there. You can also email us if you want to connect, or excuse me, contact us at bradfieldco.com, and we can get something set up. Always happy to meet with people and sort of understand what their situation is to see if there's something we can help them with. I would say, you know, take me up on that. It's a free opportunity to sort of schedule and talk with me, and see if there's something there that maybe you can improve upon.
Well, I love that. Nolan, before you go, give us a couple of words of encouragement that this accounting stuff is not something that we have to necessarily be afraid of.
Yeah, it is not. It is not something that I think, you know, it's amazing to me how oftentimes people come to me and they're like, I'm scared that I'm going to go to jail for something I do wrong on the accounting front. And I'll say this, if that is something that you are concerned about, you don't need to be. That is sort of reserved for very unique situations where you are really intentionally trying to skirt laws and regulations. And what I would say is if you're making a good faith effort and you're trying your best, you don't need to be worried about accounting. But that's also an opportunity where maybe you can bring in an expert to help you alleviate those fears and be a partner for you such that it doesn't need to consume sort of that cognitive burden in your brain of sort of you know, giving fear to your or anxiety to your life.
Nolan, thanks so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I really do hope that you can take from that and maybe even working with Nolan and find ways to have a better life through having the proper perspective with money and the control over your accounting in your life. It really can be a good thing. It doesn't have to be the evil monster looming over there ready to take over your whole life. It can be actually a really cool tool that makes your life better in every aspect of your life. And I'd really love to see that for you. I hope you got some good tips and that you will follow up as we talk more after this commercial break on selling and money here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world. Go to AskSteveKidd.com and schedule a time to talk today. The This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today as we're talking on selling and money, about how you can become friends with your money, how you can use selling as a powerful tool to meet the needs of the people that you're meant to serve, that you can use it to maximize while it's called today. Have a really great day and let somebody else have a really great day too, because you met their needs through selling them something. Yeah, that's right. It can actually end up making somebody's world a better place. I mean, imagine back when you were a kid and you saw that amazing toy that you really wanted. You really liked the person behind the cash register that sold you that toy, didn't you? The same thing can be true in every aspect when we as salespeople take the time to really, truly look at what our people need. And in every aspect of your business, there are things that you can do right like that that can make such a difference in the other people's lives. So let's talk about that a little bit here for a minute with our next guest here on Thriving Entrepreneur.
Join me in welcoming Ferris Alhulu. Hey, Ferris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Steve?
I am doing so good. Thank you. To begin us off, tell us a little bit about you and how you show up in the world.
Yeah, first, thank you for having me on the podcast. I appreciate it. Let's see, where do we start? Moved to the Silicon Valley 25 years ago, got into the startup scene, got laid off from the first startup, and then started off my first business. It was a big struggle for the first couple of years. Then we figured things out a little bit, pivoted, tried different things, and then started to specialize, built another business, sold that business, all the way to 2019, where we had grown a digital marketing analytics company that was, we ended up selling that. We became one of the top Google partners in that space. And we sold the business to a global company called Dentsu, where, and I stayed with them for a couple of years. And then in 2021 and 2022, took some time off to actually work with a number of nonprofits to help out and to think about what's the next chapter. And in 2023, my co-founder and I, Eric, and I, we started this new company, Startup with Ferris, to help early stage entrepreneurs figure out how to start a business, how to grow a business, and really the struggles and the scars I have, I don't want others to repeat. So that's what I'm spending most of my waking hours these days, to develop content to help these entrepreneurs build and grow their businesses.
I love that so much. So after that first startup failed, what did you do or say to yourself to make you willing to try another startup?
So, you know, it was really hard. I don't know, you know, those of us maybe who are listening, and you know, if you've been through a layoff, whether actually on the receiving end or on the delivery end, it's hard. I still remember the minute I was a VP at the time in this one startup. I was not a founder. I was a VP. I knew the founders very well. But basically, we raised $96 million at the time. And that was 2003, I believe. And I remember we had a new CEO at the time, and he came in and said, Ferris, we have a layoff tomorrow and you're impacted. I mean, Steve, I don't know how to explain that to you, but till this moment, every time I remember that moment, is this like my heart, the blood bursting through my veins, my heart drops. You feel all sort of emotions go through one's mind. You know, what did I do wrong? You know, why me? You start blaming others. So it was really tough the first few days. And then at the end of the day, you know, I had a wife and three kids, mouths to feed. So collect yourself. And, you know, you said, you know what, I got to go and give it my best to do something different and do something new. So all after all those emotions and thinking about what is it that I can learn from what happened, I collected myself and started to look for another job. It was really tough market at the time. And then came across a friend of mine who wanted to do a business as well. So we co-founded the first company. We were doing website design and online marketing. That was in 2003. That was cutting edge. And that started that next chapter.
And so with this second company, can you identify any things that, maybe you learned from the first company or you just did right from the beginning or whatever that might be that made it work better than the first one had?
Yeah, I always say you got to find your transferable skills. So in the first startup, we were selling to Fortune 500 infrastructure, large project, million dollar projects. When we started in the second business, it was web design services to small businesses. So I went from meeting with the C-level at Comcast and Cox and top communication companies to selling to small business owners. So it was sort of a shock to just change the way we speak, the sales cycle, the way you market, the way you present yourself. But one thing that worked out really well for us is these business owners were not used to someone showing up on time, being responsive, very professional, polished. So we leveraged that skill that we had in terms of being, very polished. We prepare everything, dot cross all the T's, dot all the I's, and turned that into a strength in this new business. Although we were selling a website, I remember my first sale was a $1,400 website that took us like 2 months to implement. So I think always I like those transferable skills from one venture to another, from one chapter in life to another, seem to have worked well for me.
So now that you've got a few years behind you and you've done some things, if you could go back and talk to the younger version of yourself, maybe not the first startup, because maybe you need that failure to have the successes you've now had, but maybe right at the beginning of that second startup or whatever, what is some piece of advice that you know now that you'd love to go back and give to that person or the identical version of somebody now that is like what you were then?
Yeah, there's a long list, Steve. I would say the one thing, when I started actually my first job and then I moved to the startup, I mean, my working hard and, the work ethics and nobody teaches you this stuff in colleges, at least in my time, way back then. And I don't know now, probably with my kids who graduated from college as well, I don't think they're taught how to look for a job, how to kind of, you got to work hard. Things are not going to be handed off to you. So I kind of initially earlier in my career, I was thinking sort of it's 8 to 5 and you do your job and you move on, which is fine. Depending on your circumstance, depending on what else is going on in your life, you might be just having to do just that. But I think if you want to grow, if you want to build something worthwhile, if you want to, start a business, grow a business, or just advance in your career, I think 8 to 5 doesn't cut it. And I wish someone had had shared that with me earlier in my career. I'm fortunate where I am and what we have and the resources that we have today. No regret in that. Very content. But I think, I look at maybe the first 3, 4, 5 years, I could have done better. I could have learned more. I could have maybe helped others more. So that's probably the one thing is if and I know the whole thing about the hustle culture, but at the end of the day, you have to take care of your relationships, your personal life, others, your family, your wife, your children, your whatever responsibility you have. But there are times where you gotta make some sacrifices and put time and effort into whatever you're doing to get something, out of it.
Now, I know my listeners, and I know they always love to be able to know, how could they interact with you? What are the kind of things that you have Well, selfishly, what are the things that you have that you could do for them? We're kind of all that way, aren't we? So what are some of the things that you're doing in the world these days that other people might be interested in being a part of?
Yeah, thanks, Steve. So we have actually, if you go to startupwithferris.com, we have a newsletter that where we talk about frameworks and strategies to help, especially early stage founders. So those we address two audiences, those who are thinking about starting a business and those who started and they're struggling, especially in the services and consulting space. That's most of my background. So we have a newsletter that they can sign up for. We have a YouTube channel that we're building this community, and we offer no charge, no strings attached, a 30-minute session with me where you can ask any question. And again, no pitching, no, we're not selling consulting. We're not monetizing actually yet. We are building the community for at least for the next little while. So if you're stuck in selling this, your services, if you are having issues with accounting, if you are not sure what to do in terms of 2024 planning, feel out to submit that form. We'll schedule a time, 30 minutes. I'm there to help you, to share what I've learned and help you maybe overcome the struggle that you're going through.
I love that so much. So before I let you go, let's give people a little bit of teaching information. When it comes to a startup, I liked what you said about, you're not really going to work 9 to 5, but in addition to that, what is the number one thing that startup companies really need to do to be successful?
The number one thing.
Or a thing, if that's maybe unfair.
I'm founders, because I'm in the middle of actually working on 2024 planning. And the number one thing I believe founders and aspiring founders, you got to building some resilience. People talk about that, but I think risk taking. So I'm not advocating being reckless, but if you are serious about starting a business and growing the business, you must take some risk. And the greater the risk, the greater the potential reward. No one can guarantee success, but if you're not getting a bit out of your comfort zone, if you're not maybe living on a budget for a little bit, if you're not forcing yourself to go to a networking event to get some leads, and you're not that type, if you're not taking some of those risks at the personal level, at the financial level, it's going to be really hard to experience that entrepreneurial journey. So that would be my number one thing, is find ways to learn more about and take step by step, get a little bit of exposure to some small risk, and develop that skill set, I think, and that mindset. I think that is really crucial.
And Veris, please do give us that URL for people to have that free session with you.
Yeah, thank you. So it's startupwithferris.com, start up with, and then my name, Ferris, Ferras.com. And you can go also on YouTube and just search for Startup with Ferris and you'll see our channel.
I love that so much. Well, Ferris, thank you so much for spending some time with us here on the show today.
Steve, I appreciate it. I appreciate the content that you're producing, and I'm subscribing to your podcast, and wish you the best of luck, and wish your listeners the best of luck as well.
I really hope that whether you're brand new in your company or you're just using this to restart yourself, that you'll do the kind of things that will help you start your company outright, and that you can be a thriving entrepreneur. We are going to take one more commercial break, and we'll be right back here on Thriving Entrepreneur. Don't go away. Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world.
Go to AskSteveKid.com and schedule a time to talk today. This is Steve. Welcome back. Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. We've got a little bit of space here between now and the end of the show where I get to have fun and talk to you for just a few minutes. We talked this whole entire episode about selling, about money, about all those really awful, evil words that really do kind of make our lives better. And I hope that in some way we put some niceness, some happiness, at least some lack of fear and disappointment around words like selling and money for you, so that when you're out there and you're doing your sales, you can see that you're providing opportunity for a person, that you're showing up. When you show up powerfully as a salesperson, when you show up powerfully using your money as the tool that it is, you are doing a great thing in this world. You are helping yourself, your family, but also all those people that you serve with all the cool stuff that you do with your business. How do I know that? Because I know that you are uniquely brilliant. You were created for a purpose, and the world, it needs you. We're so glad for you being the you that is you, doing the thing that you do, powerfully showing up in your sales, with your money, in life, in your business, as a thriving entrepreneur. I celebrate you for that. If you haven't shared your message with the world, if you don't have that book, if your book isn't a bestseller, or if you've got another book, like I do, that's coming out of you right now, I'm always here to help you. I love being there for you. I celebrate for you in advance, just like I had this past week for a couple of my friends. Didn't work with me, but I'm so proud of the cool successes that they've had. I just want to be there in your corner, celebrating how awesome you are and every one of the achievements that you make. Of course, sure, I'd love to have you work with me, and I don't mind being a salesperson asking you if you would do business with me, but more than that, I love seeing you get it done in the world, making that difference that you make, and seeing people's lives better because you showed up to be you. That's pretty cool. I hope that today you learned even just one thing about sales that made you feel a little bit better about it, and maybe even in addition to that, one little thing about money that made you have just a little different relationship with your money so that you can do more and be more, doing and being just simply you. You're so cool. I'm so glad that you're here, that you spent this time with us today. It's my privilege every single time that I get to bring this show here to you, to be able to spend a little bit of time with you, talking to you about how you can do that most amazing of things, and that's thrive, so that you can live every day of your life as a thriving entrepreneur. Until we're together again next time, I hope that you have a great week.
Thanks for listening to Thriving Entrepreneur today. If you want to get your question answered, send an email to questions@wehelpyouthrive.com. We look forward to you joining us again next time.
Hi, my name is Steve Kidd. I am a third-generation minister, an international best-selling author of multiple books, and I help people write, publish, and market their books to bestseller. In fact, there are literally thousands of people that have used the system that I created to be able to write, publish, and market their books, and now they're best-selling authors, and you're next. I just wanted to come on for a minute, say hi to you, tell you a little bit about me, introduce myself, and tell you, I know the world is waiting on your message, and I would be so honored to be part of sharing your message with the world.
go to asksstevekid.com and schedule a time to talk today.